When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Again, it underlines the fact that, you know, each generation does things differently. And I think the way she did it, it was so composed. Again, we forget, but I mean, it was only days ago that the poor woman was having to sort of put out a statement after the Mothering Sunday photo had been sort of elevated to the sort of status of some sort of tablet of stone.
Kids will be aware of what's happening. They'll be in the living room when their parents are watching the news, or they'll be on their social media or their TikTok feed or whatever. So this is all about protecting George, Charlotte and Louis from people at school talking about their mother's health.
Hi everyone, we're back for another episode of a Right Royal podcast with me, Andrea.
And me, Emily.
This week, we'll be talking to Royal Author Robert Hahnemann and ITV News' Royal Editor Chris Shipp to get their take on everything that has happened since our last episode. Still no Emmy. She will be back with us for the next episode, though.
I know. Well, she's missed quite a lot, to
she's
be fair.
She's missed quite a lot.
Just when we thought that the Royal story couldn't get any bigger, on Friday, just 12 hours after our last episode went out, the Princess of Wales shared her cancer diagnosis with the world.
In an incredibly moving video that actually made me well up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the news came as a huge shock to everybody, but it did put to rest all the conspiracy theories we talked about last time and also put into context a lot of the questions that we felt had been unanswered in the last few weeks. Now, first and foremost, I want to say that obviously it goes without saying we send our best wishes for a swift recovery to the Princess of Wales. And really just we're all
rooting for her.
For her and the King. You know, this is, say this many times, an unprecedented situation for the royal family. But let's have a little chat through what happened, shall we?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to know how you reacted to Kensington Palace's announcement on Friday. So let's start with our episode and tell me all about it.
Well, on Friday, Hello Magazine goes to print and we'd had a really busy week, including recording last week's episode, putting together a cover story. We were sort of putting the final touches to the magazine when I got a message to say that there was going to be an update on the Princess of Wales around 3:30 in the afternoon.
What went through your mind?
That this was not going to be something small for them to put it out on a Friday afternoon, certainly after the week that we'd all had. And I alerted the team and then joined a meeting at about 4 p.m. to find out what the announcement was. And we were read the princess's statement in full, and it was at the moment where she describes her operation initially for a condition that was not thought to be cancerous that my stomach sort of turned and we realized just quite how serious this was going to be. And it was echoing in many ways the announcement about King Charles earlier in the year, because similarly we've been told it was not thought to be cancerous. And then obviously the following sentence changed everything.
Now, Friday's announcement, you know, when I heard it, just put a lot of things, like you say, I understood a lot of the things that had happened because, you know, there has been so much talk and why are they doing this? Why are they not doing that? Why are they so bothered about this and correcting this? And suddenly it was like, ah, it was like an aha moment, like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, it absolutely all made sense. And even down to the timing, which, you know, there has been a lot of chat in various quarters over the last few days about how she was forced into giving this update. Well, of course, she was in many ways forced to share her health condition because of such a clamour for more information about her. But I think there are two other really key points about the timing of this. And I'm very much being told it wasn't as a response to the conspiracy theories. First and foremost, you know, there was an expectation that she would come back to work around Easter.
Yeah.
If not for the Easter Sunday service, we would see her once the children returned to Lanbrook after their holidays.
And that was not a lie.
That was absolutely not.
Because, like Kate explained it herself, once she had the operation, they had no idea that cancer would be involved.
100%. So the working plan was that she would return after the school holidays at Easter. And it was getting to the point where we were all writing about this and, you know, talking about her eventual comeback. And I think that she and the palace realised that they had to correct the narrative on that because it wasn't going to be the case. So that was a big practical aspect to it. But first and foremost, for William and Kate, it was about managing the news for their children. And we talked about this last week, you know, protecting the kids is absolutely paramount to them. It's their motivation for the way they do everything. Yeah. And you have to appreciate that's largely because of William's own experience as a child, being at the centre of his parents' separation and divorce and knowing the damage that all the chat around these things can cause to children. So it was very much about them managing the news for their kids who were aware and who, as Kate explained so eloquently, had been given time to come to terms with it, understand it and process the news first. And on Friday, what happened was that they broke up for the Easter holidays. Yeah. And so William and Kate were able to take them from school and just have some family time away from TV news, from newspapers, from the general discussion, which of course exploded after her statement was made. So I think that's really important to remember. Yes, she has shared more than any other member of the royal family has, really, in terms of the way she spoke so personally and so directly about it. But in terms of the timing, it was very much with the children in mind.
Now, I have to admit, I've listened to that video a lot of times. And I think every time I watch it, I get something different from it. Well, first, I was just like in awe that she managed to do that for 2 minutes and 15 seconds with just one go. Mm-hmm. But also, one of the most surprising sentences is when she says that she had to get better from her operation to then start treatment.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is awful because just waiting for a result is bad. You have to wait normally. I mean, they tell you 10 days to up to 2 weeks. But what I understand from the video, she found out about her cancer while she was still not even halfway probably recovering from her abdominal surgery. She had to get better and stronger to then start chemo. And I cannot imagine what those, I don't know how long it was, weeks, days or a month. I can't imagine what she went through at that point.
Well, look, it's something that unfortunately listeners will probably have some understanding of because it affects so many people that we know and love.
She has an incredible support system, though, behind her.
She does. I mean, not least, you know, from people all over the world. I found it incredible, the outpouring of affection and support from her on social media. You know, had world leaders like Emmanuel Macron, you had Jill Biden, the First Lady, saying we love you. And that must have just been so heartening. And William Kate actually put out a statement over the weekend talking about how profoundly moving the public response had been. But for Kate, as we know, family absolutely comes first.
Yeah.
And I think that William, she praised him openly in her
rock
statement, talking about what a comfort he has been to her. But also her parents, Carol and Michael.
Carol has probably not left her side since she's had operation. I mean, they haven't been on holiday. You know, we've seen in the last half term, we saw her siblings go and be with their families and maybe add a bit of normality.
I saw a little criticism around that. And I think that's really unfair because it's entirely possible that they weren't aware at that point of the full situation.
Exactly.
But so she has the Middleton family rallying around her. She has some very dear, close friends, you know, who are incredibly discreet. Whether or not she had told everyone before she made the announcement, I'm not entirely sure because something like this had to be kept very much within a kind of circle of trust, yeah. if you like. But I think also it's really interesting to note the support she's had from the king and queen. Yeah. And I think that will have really buoyed her up. You know, the king in particular, going through this experience himself, will have a unique understanding that others perhaps might not. And it's not something that anyone would have wished yeah. for. But to have that in common, I suppose, and to be able to lean on each other will be some kind of comfort to them both.
I hope they're sharing, you know, because I know the king loves to read and he has so many people around him telling him maybe what to try or what to not. And I bet that if they're communicating and sharing those advices,
well, what's
very special.
What's interesting is they're both incredibly healthy living people,
yeah.
which, you know, is distressing in itself
yeah.
because it just goes to show that cancer doesn't discriminate. And also they both have access to fantastic medical experts. So, you know, I think we all should feel optimistic.
Yes.
As they appear to. You know, I'm being told that the king is very optimistic to the point that his nephew Peter Phillip said the other day he's...
frustrated.
He's actually frustrated by how long it's taking. I spoke to somebody last week who said that just because he's not busy publicly, in fact, actually having the downtime is making him busier than ever mentally.
Yeah,
and
he's yeah, yeah.
He's having so loads many, of yeah. ideas and really sort of pushing things and some of his... charities at the moment because he's just so eager to get back out there. And I think that's a great sign. And similarly, from what Kate said, the way she shared her diagnosis, I found was incredibly optimistic. You know, she talked yeah. about wanting to be able to tell children that she will be okay and that she's concentrating
getting, yeah.
on getting stronger every day and doing the things that will help her recover in mind, body and spirit. And I think they say that having this positive mental attitude it really
yeah.
is key to getting through this kind of illness. So it all seems to be going in the right direction,
yes.
certainly for them mentally. But yeah, what an extraordinary turn of events.
And I actually do hope that in the next 3 weeks, which is what kind of the Easter holidays, school holidays last, that she's just surrounded by those who love her and are giving her such positive vibes. And we hope to see her one day, wherever that day is, whenever she's ready, we'll be waiting.
My work has always brought me a deep sense of joy, and I look forward to being back when I'm able. But for now, I must focus on making a full recovery. At this time, I'm also thinking of all those whose lives have been affected by cancer. For everyone facing this disease, in whatever form, please do not lose faith or hope. You are not alone.
And with that, I think we should welcome our first guest.
Yes, we are speaking first of all to the wonderful Robert Hardman, author of Charles III, New King, New Court, The Inside Story. We spoke to him just a few months
yeah.
ago now. How times have changed. Let's welcome him to the podcast.
Welcome, Robert.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us again. It feels like only a few days ago that we were talking about the wonderful success of the start of the King's reign. Things have taken quite a turn since we last spoke. Can you tell us, first of all, what your reaction was to the news last week about the Princess of Wales?
Yes, I was as surprised as everybody. It was one of those stand by your desks moment. There was a reel. I was watching it in the newsroom at the Mail, and you know, people were very, very sad. I mean, it just felt a sort of national sense of very deep sympathy. And as I say, shock. I mean, that was not what we were expecting. We'd seen the statement from the princess back in January saying that she was unlikely to be resuming public duties until after Easter. You know, we all hoped and assumed everything was moving in the right direction and Easter was approaching. And of course, that's now going to have to change.
Yeah, it's obviously the last thing anyone wanted to hear. How do you think that the family are coping with this? How do you think that they're going to sort of react to this, the wider family, those who aren't undergoing serious health treatment at the moment?
I think that the royal family are used to having to deal with personal crises in the public eye because that's sort of the nature of royal life. I mean, that is no preparation for something like this. In short, we don't know. But one thing I think is worth remembering is that the royal family have very long-standing and close links with a number of cancer charities. I've been on trips with the then Prince of Wales on walkabouts, on away days or whatever, he always keeps an eye out, for example, for sort of Marie Curie shops, because that's one of his patronages. And he was sort of popping in. How's everything going? Behind the scenes, those with medical charities, they're in close contact with the management of those charities. They often make private visits. So in terms of how something like cancer, how it affects a family, I think they will possibly have a greater degree of familiarity with how it's handled, how it's managed, how it can be in any way mitigated. But at the same time, it's a reminder that the Windsors are mortals like the rest of us. And we have to have great sympathy with the fact that they are undergoing, you know, an absolute the sort of shock of a lifetime, except they're having to undergo it with all of us talking about it.
It's quite extraordinary that both King Charles and Kate are both going through the similar experience. And obviously Charles is a bit ahead. He started his treatment just before Kate. Do you think he has been a source of comfort for Kate?
I'm sure he's been a source of comfort for her in the same way I suspect she's probably been a source of comfort for him. I think it cannot but have brought them, you know, even closer together. I mean, he's always had a huge regard for his daughter-in-law. He thinks she's just wonderful. And this was only going to sort of entrench that. There's another factor, I think, also we should remember, which is, I mean, all the royal cousins are very close to their cousins, Beatrice and Eugenie, who are going through a similar experience because their mother, Sarah, Duchess of York, and they are having to go through a similar thing, looking after their mother, who's also undergoing treatment for cancer. So it's hard to recall a time when the House of Windsor has had a sort of a number of these sort of medical events all coming together at the same time. They will deal with it because they have to.
There have been, you know, reports about the King and Kate's kind of relationship and bonding lately. The visits during the hospital, a private lunch before she recorded the message.
It was just after, I think, it was shared.
Yeah, before it was shared. What can you tell us about those moments between them?
Well, they're private moments, so we don't know. But I certainly understand that when the Princess was in hospital and she was in the London clinic at the same time as the King, and they overlapped by 3 days. And yes, he made at least a couple of visits. I mean, when people are in hospital, you know, they don't really want a fuss. The royal family always hate fuss. They don't like having lots of visitors. But the fact was the King was there, she was there, and the Queen was there with him as well. And they did go around to check and reassure the Princess. I mean, that was obviously back in January. And then, as we know, shortly after the Princess recorded her message, she went round to the castle and there was a private lunch with the King. And again, we don't know what was discussed, but I mean, it's very clear that he is extremely concerned about her and I think wants to make sure that much as he can, and it's very much her and William are dealing with this, but he wants to ensure that if there's anything he can do, he will do. Because for a very fit and healthy young mother, I mean, this is a different order of magnitude to someone having to deal with this in their late 70s.
We've spoken, obviously, about the King and Kate's bond, but do you think this has brought the King and Prince William closer? Because William is going through an incredibly tough time, not just his dad, you know, is ill, but his wife. I can't imagine how he's feeling.
The stresses on everybody are immense, I think, at the moment. And I do think we should remember that, for Prince William, I mean, that this is, as it were, there's multiple challenges are coming in very different directions. But I mean, his absolute core concern, and he's made that clear, very clear, his wife and his family. Over recent years, I mean, he has been very close to his father, more close than perhaps before, just because of, events. I mean, since the King acceded to the throne, life has changed for Prince William. I mean, that night the Queen died, it was just the two of them and the Queen sat down together at Burke Hall, not with the rest of the family, because there was so much to sort out and discuss. I think the way he's dealt with it so far, Prince William, he's been very direct in making it clear to the palace and to us and everybody else that family comes first. For a while, he was, there was that moment when he was sort of being criticised because he didn't turn up at King Constantine's memorial service. People were saying, oh, well, why can't he do that? He lives so close, etc., etc. It must have been very tempting to say, look, for heaven's sake, give the guy a break. He's going through this, that, and the other. But he didn't, because his policy throughout has been to absolutely keep this, to internalize this. This is private stuff, and it doesn't matter what's going on in the noisy outside world. This is our private issue, and we're going to handle it privately. I'm quite sure that's how it will continue from now on, too.
You said in your book that Charles gave him permission to take a step back to be more with his family. And I guess that still stands.
Yes. I mean, it's not so much permission. I think there's just an understanding that these days a young modern family, and they are a modern family. I mean, they do all the sort of things that other young families do. Yes, there are the royal duties. The king understands that. He's always understood, and it applied to him too. Each generation does things a little differently. His reign, we're already seeing the way in which he does things differently to the Queen in a number of regards. There's a sort of greater transparency. I mean, just the whole way that the palace is now handling a medical situation is entirely different from the way this would have been handled and broadcast and dealt with just a few years ago. So we do see how things change with the generations, and that's understood, and the King gets that.
I think what I've found really striking is, to go back to your point a moment ago, Robert, is that there was this criticism of William in some quarters about him not stepping up and not helping the institution. You know, there was a lot of talk about him doing the school runs. Of course, that has now all been explained and put into context very deftly by Kate herself. It really strikes me now when you look back at engagements he was doing just last week, you know, in Sheffield, that he's coping remarkably well. And again, it seems to be this ability that some royals have to absolutely compartmentalise. For him to have gone out and interacted with people in the way that he did, with everything that's going on behind the scenes, I think is really quite admirable.
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you think back to, it was only the other day, he was presenting those Diana Awards. Well, I mean, that's another huge pull on the heartstrings, if you like, for a young man. He's in the middle of handling this crisis with his wife. He's got the young children he's having to look after. His father is in a similar boat, and he's on a public stage remembering his late mother. I mean, yeah, he's a very composed... You know, I think history will look back on this period and may well say of the future William V, this was the making of him.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, actually. I mean, you do find that in adversity. Sometimes people's characters really do sort of come to the fore. I think everyone has a new understanding of him now, just because of the news we had on Friday. Going back to that, I mean, what did you make, and obviously this has been pored over at length, but for our listeners, of Kate's message, of the way she put that together, it really was like nothing we've ever seen before from her.
Or indeed from, you know, another member of the royal family. I mean, I can't remember a time when a senior member of the family sort of addressed the nation, as it were, on their own health situation. Again, it underlines the fact that, you know, each generation does things differently. And I think the way she did it, it was so composed. And it was, again, we forget, but I mean, it was only days ago that the poor woman was having to sort of put out a statement after the Mothering Sunday photo had been sort of elevated to the sort of status of some sort of tablet of stone. And it's a Mothering Day photo. It had some minor editing and everyone suddenly went ballistic. So this time around, I think, you know, very wisely, this was not a sort of in-house production. This was done by BBC Studios Events, who are the gold standard for filming anything, filming the coronation, the filming cenotaph. And they were the team who came down to Windsor to film the late Queen when she did her famous We'll Meet Again COVID address to the nation. And it was exactly the same unit that came down to film this. And I think the fact that it was direct, incredibly poised, and all done in one take. After that, you could almost sort of hear the slow sloping of trolls off back to the sort of cyber dungeons, because that really did put all those idiots in their place, I think.
It did. There's been a lot of apologies yes, floating around this week, and rightly so. I mean, it's something we discussed last week, and yeah. We were really genuinely quite shocked by the way she'd been almost commodified, you know, and had become this talking point. Where does the royal family go from here? Obviously, we know now, we have an understanding that they are going to be less visible in the coming months. But do you see this I mean, we all obviously hope this is a temporary situation. How much are they going to have to adapt in the longer term?
I'm not sure we will see less of them in the coming months. I mean, I think, you know, we're coming into spring. I mean, early summer is the sort of busiest time, if you like, of the sort of the royal year in public terms. And I think there's every aspiration, certainly from Buckingham Palace, that the king and the working family will sort of stick to the traditional timetable. Now, there are things that he can do, things he can't do, and things he will do differently. I mean, all his constitutional duties carry on as normal. He hasn't missed a beat on those, because things like talking to the Prime Minister and meeting ambassadors and going through the paperwork and signing legislation and all those things, I mean, that carries on. Mm-hmm. That's the core business of monarchy. And there are some things he can't do. He can't do walkabouts. He can't jump on a plane. He can't do overseas tours just yet. But things like, for example, the birthday parade, Trooping the Colour coming up, that's something that I'm sure he intends to do, to be at. He doesn't have to mix with huge numbers of other people. I think something that's preying very much on his mind is that it's a big, big year in anniversary terms. As June the 6th will be the 80th anniversary of D-Day, which is just, you know, one of the sort of landmark events of modern history. You're going to have all the heads of state from all the allied nations on the beaches in Normandy. And I think the king will do all that he can to be there as the head of state of the nation that led the charge. So how he does it, I don't know. The mechanics of it, and obviously, you know, we don't know what stage of treatment he's at, therefore we don't know the extent to which he can meet strangers and be in crowds, but where there's a will, there's a way. And then, you know, alongside him, you've got Queen Camilla stepping in, stepping up, left, right and centre. We'll see that all over Easter. She's standing in for the king at the Royal Maundy ceremony, which is very important, great royal ritual. Goes back to 1215. The late Queen used to love that event. That's going to happen. You've got people like the Princess Royal, the Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh. You know, they'll be making sure that, say, when things like garden parties come along. I mean, garden parties are a huge part of the royal machine. Each one, something like 8,000 people are invited to tea. And that would have been planned. You know, that's well in hand now. I mean, those invitations have gone out. Those people are already buying their hats and their shoes and their new suits and what have you, and they're booking hotels, and it's going to be absolutely the day of a lifetime. And no one wants to let them down and rearrange those things. So that'll carry on.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I wanted to talk a bit more about Camilla, because we were talking this week how it will be the first Maundy service led by a
consort.
I
think we're right in saying that, aren't we?
Yes, I think so. I mean, the Royal Maundy is, it was really revived under the last Queen, under Elizabeth II. I mean, really from the 18th century up to the 20th century, monarchs had largely left it to somebody called the Royal Almoner to do it. So yes, it will be the first time that a consort has stepped in. I mean, there were moments, I think there may have been moments when the late Queen didn't attend. But if that was the case, either because she was away, or she did miss one or two state occasions when she was pregnant with Prince Andrew and Prince Edward, then it would be left to somebody called the Royal Almoner, who is always one of the senior bishops, is appointed to the role. And traditionally, you know, that he would dispense the Maundy money. And that was that. Clearly, because Elizabeth II forged this close connection. And she was entirely responsible for moving this event outside Westminster Abbey. It always used to happen at Westminster Abbey on an occasional basis. And Elizabeth II thought, well, you know, why have we got to keep it in London? Let's move it around. And in the course of her reign, she held the Royal Maundy service in every single cathedral in England. It would, you know, one year it would be in Sheffield, the next it might be in Derby or Gloucester or whatever. And so it's in, you know, this year it's Worcester. And so many layers. It's an event that sort of goes to the heart of monarchy, because it's very religious. The monarch is there as sort of supreme governor of the Church of England. It's all about the monarch, as it were, not just handing out alms to the poor, but actually there's a sort of element of humility. It's sort of based on the tradition of the sort of the Last Supper, of sort of Christ washing disciples' feet. And although monarchs don't wash feet anymore, they did used to wash feet, actually, up until I think it was James I who decided he didn't want to carry on washing feet. And then it reverted to handing out money instead. But all those sort of elements of the ritual are there. You'll see people sort of holding towels, for example. There are children who, what are called the children of the Maundy, who are four local children who have been chosen, who walk in front of the monarch holding nosegays, which are strongly scented flowers, which are meant to sort of ward off the smell of the poor in medieval times. I mean, all these little tiny bits of this ritual go back hundreds of years. And yet it's very powerful. You know, you always have Handel, Zadok the priest playing as the monarch, or in this case, the Queen Camilla, present the coins. It's a sort of wonderful bit of medieval tradition, if you like, but it's incredibly popular. And all the people who get chosen to receive Maundy money are people who've done something for their local community. So it's a sort of mini honours investiture, if you like, mixed with a rather wonderful church service.
So what I wanted to go from there was the fact that she has stepped up. She is doing so much on behalf of the king. I mean, I feel like this would, some of her engagement would have fallen, you know, on the shoulders of William. Is he feeling grateful, William, to have that support from Camilla? I mean, obviously the king is, but, you know, she is kind of taking pressure off both their backs at this point.
At the moment, there haven't been sort of events, as it were, which require the heir to the throne to step in, you know, where it really has to be him. So I'm thinking, for example, if you had a state visit that was going to go ahead, then if the king couldn't be there, then that would be one for the Prince of Wales. I mean, you look back to the sort of events where Prince Charles, as was, stood in for Elizabeth II. There weren't many, but there were some. I mean, for example, I remember in 2017, the first year that it was Prince Charles who laid the wreath at the cenotaph on behalf of the Queen. She was on the balcony, and that seemed very significant at the time. But actually, after a while, we just, it was what happened. There have been things. I mean, for example, in recent days, Queen Camilla represented the king in the Isle of Man and in Northern Ireland. Those were events that were going to be events for the king, and it was the queen who stepped in. They didn't require, if you like, the heir to the throne. There wasn't a sort of protocol dimension. I think it's when the protocol really kicks in. I would imagine if for whatever reason that the king can't make it to D-Day, then we would certainly expect the, you know, the heir to the throne, the second in, or the first in line to the throne, to be there. I suppose looking forward, the big question in the autumn will be the Commonwealth Summit in Samoa.
That's an enormous trip. And I think even for someone not recovering from cancer treatment, it's a big ask, isn't it? So that will certainly be one to watch. But I imagine the king will obviously be very hopeful that he can be there in some way, shape or form.
My understanding is that certainly that's in the planning. You know, you're going to have a plan A and a plan B to head off, you know, literally to the other side of the world. I mean, I don't think you can get much further than Samoa. That is going to be a big ask. And if he is in the Pacific, then I'm quite sure he will want to go and visit Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, you know, those places while he's there. So I think they'll have to be careful how they approach that. But if he can't do it, then we would hope that the Prince of Wales will be able to do that. But again, that, you know, that's going to depend on his personal situation. I mean, whoever it is, it's a long way and there's a lot to do. Monarchy, you plan, but you always have to have, you know, a backup plan.
Especially this year. 2024 is one of surprises.
It's one for the history books. Robert, thank you so much for your wonderful insights, as always. As you say, this is such a year of uncertainty. No one had this on their 2024 wish list, of course.
No way.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love to talk to you again further down the line. Let's see how things unfold.
Very good. Thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure to chat to Robert.
I know, fascinating. And there was so much detail there about Maundy Thursday that I hadn't heard before. I think it's worth going back and looking at all the photographs from yesterday again.
Definitely.
I think it's really interesting as well that someone like Robert, who's so well connected and has fantastic contacts inside the palace, was as surprised as anyone else. It really goes to show how much this has been kept a secret.
Yeah. And I've loved how this has brought King Charles and Kate closer together, if that was possible.
Yeah.
I've loved the tales about them meeting in the hospital and that private lunch.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this isn't a situation either of them would have chosen, but I think having that shared experience just gives them something else in common.
Yeah. Right. Well, with that, should we move on to our next guest?
Yeah, let's do that. We're going to speak to Chris Shipp, ITV's Royal Editor. Get his take on what's been another extraordinary week on the Royal Beat. Chris, welcome back to A Right Royal Podcast. We're very grateful that you've made some time for us in what has been an extraordinarily busy few days. I think last time we spoke to you, you were in Copenhagen, having had yet another day off cancelled.
Yeah.
Andrea wants to know, have you had that day off yet?
Well, actually, I was off on Friday afternoon when, as you, like me, Emily, got the message from Kensington Palace that we needed to join a Teams call to be told some significant news. And you can just see the rest of your day sort of falling apart in some kind of dramatic fashion. Of course, look, you know, we all know what the news was now and how serious it is. But a lot of us have to sort of cancel things, rearrange things, sort out dogs and children and food that you were going to cook but then aren't going to because you end up racing in a taxi to Buckingham Palace. So, you know, that's kind of the nature of the job. But I think you'll agree it happens a bit more regularly than we would like.
Yeah, certainly in the last few weeks. I mean, we've used the word unprecedented far too much recently, but there's really no other way to describe what's been going on.
No, when you think about it now, there's only really four members of the royal family that we really do focus on, and that's King, Queen, William, Kate. And two of them right now are receiving treatment for cancer. I don't think any of us went into 2024 expecting anything like this. You know, the head of state, largely not seen, can't go to the Maundy Thursday service this week. We see him at Buckingham Palace every so often, but, you know, largely can't do big public events. And now this dreadful news about the Princess of Wales and everything that she's been going through. And at the same time, battling all this nasty online conspiracy theories about why a woman who's had a very serious operation and then discovered that she had cancer has taken time off work.
Yeah.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, we talked last week in detail about the conspiracy theories and I got quite angry about it.
Yes.
And I think she very neatly put a stop to that with this statement, which was incredibly powerful and incredibly moving. I think you were saying the other day, for some people, it's never going to be enough. There are still people questioning what's in front of their very eyes.
Yeah.
What we want to talk about a bit is how this impacts everyone else. And you were in Sheffield with the Prince of Wales last week. And knowing now what we do about Kate, how do you think he is coping? But in particular, you know, having all that going on in the background and just going out and doing his job as normal, what do you make of that?
We saw him in Sheffield focusing on one of his signature projects, which is Homewards, which is to eradicate homelessness within 5 years, which itself is a very bold plan. And even other than, say, Earthshot, his environmental awards, it is really William's main signature project, isn't it, at the moment, and his main body of work. So I think we saw someone who was very focused. We did wonder, would he mention his wife? He did just that tiny little mention when he was having a conversation about early years with somebody at a round table. But you think about the pressure that he's under. I mean, it must be, you know, let's face it, pretty miserable living in the royal family. I mean, yes, okay, there are plenty of benefits to living in the royal family, but there are plenty of downsides as well, one of which is the attention and living in the public eye. And yet having to do that at the time when your father, who's head of state, is receiving cancer treatment, probably that throne with William's name on it is looking bigger and closer than ever before, even if, you know, we don't know the king's prognosis, of course, but we do know his age and we do know he's got, you know, cancer and he's having treatment for it. And then at the same time, having to deal with his wife having a serious operation, subsequently finding out that she's had cancer, going through chemotherapy, three young children, the oldest of which is 10 years old and is only in year six in primary school. I mean, that must be phenomenally difficult. And you can talk about privilege and wealth and all the things that they obviously do have. But that's a lot for anyone to deal with. That the mental load on him at the moment is absolutely phenomenal, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
Robert Hardman actually said, our other guest, on his Sunday column, I think, that actually all the conspiracy theory chat did get to the school gates. So it must have been incredibly hard because, you know, they would want to hide all this from them.
Or protect them.
Yeah, protect them. But, you know, it's so, so difficult.
Mm. Well, that really played into the timing as well. Let's talk a little bit about the timing because it was made very clear to us, wasn't it, Chris, that this was very much about putting the children first, despite what other things are floating around about reactions to the photoshopping debacle and things like that.
Yes, look, I mean, I think we will all agree, and Kate admitted herself, she put a foot wrong during the Photoshop. She put out a picture that she clearly edited and did not help the conspiracy theories that were already out there. Then we, of course, last week we had the Sun video, and even a lot of people, I just couldn't believe, I haven't seen anyone look more like Kate.
Literally,
in the video.
That is what I said.
I mean, that was William and Kate at a farm shop buying bread, okay? And then people were saying, who's the body double? Who's standing in for the, that's not her, she doesn't look like, I mean, it's just unbelievable, wasn't it? The ridiculous level of noise out there. And then obviously Friday was all timed around the children finishing school for Easter. Lambrook School finished on Friday. They go back, I think, on April the 17th. So they've now got kind of 4 weeks off to collectively put their arms around each other as a family and try to deal with what they are going through. Now, we're told the kids already knew. I don't know when they got told, but it was before Friday. But this was all about stopping them, as you just mentioned, at the school gate. Because George will have friends aged 10 who have got phones. I mean, some parents let their kids have phones at that age. Kids will be aware of what's happening. They'll be in the living room when their parents are watching the news, or they'll be on their, you know, their social media or their TikTok feed or whatever. So this is all about protecting George, Charlotte and Louis from people at school talking about their mother's health. Now, that's completely understandable. Now, when they go back to school, of course, everyone will know about it, but at least they will have had time to deal with it. Kids kind of forget things and move on quite quickly as well, don't they? And hopefully things will have been a lot calmer by the time they go back to school on the 17th of April.
What do you make of this whole situation for the royals going forward? Obviously, we're still seeing the king. He's maintaining quite significant visibility, all things considered. But, you know, for those of us who follow the royals week in, week out, it's a challenging time, isn't it?
It is. There's a lot of focus on Camilla, obviously, and she's going to stand in for him at the Maundy Thursday service at Worcester Cathedral this year and give out the Maundy money, which is something that the king would ordinarily do. Interestingly, it was him who would stand in for his mother when she was no longer able to stand for that long, when she, you know, we were told, remember that phrase Buckingham Palace used all the time, mobility issues.
Yes,
the late queen had. And then there's Easter Sunday. He will try and join the royal family because, again, it's a controlled environment, isn't it, inside the walls of Windsor Castle, the court in front of St. George's Chapel. You don't have to walk all the way down. You can even drive down in a car if you want and just get out by the Galilee porch and go in that entrance. So if he can do that, he will. And I think everyone will be quite happy about that. Those around him will be happy about that. He'll be happy about that because we haven't really seen him with Camilla on an engagement like that for a little while now. But he's trying to be as visible as he can. And Buckingham Palace are saying that the duties of head of state are carrying on. They take issue with all these people writing it's a really unstable time for the monarchy. I think they do have to acknowledge, though, it's a precarious moment.
Yeah.
You know, with two of the four most senior members being off having cancer treatment, I don't think anyone will disagree with the fact that things feel very precarious and the royal family feels very small, very thin on the ground at the moment. And, you know, think about the days when everyone said the royal family is too bloated, too fat, too many of them. Well, you don't really hear anyone say that about them at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's very much happened by accident rather than by design, hasn't it? And it puts pressure on those who are still operating, the Queen in particular, who, let's not forget, is in her late 70s, is dealing with her husband going through cancer treatment and getting out there and putting a brave face on everything and doing her duties. It's not something we could have foreseen a few years ago, is it?
I find that kind of staggering. When you think, you know, in the mid-1990s, what, 30, 40 years ago, she was one of the most hated women in the country. And now she is standing in for the king, kind of leading the nation. And Holy Week is a very important week in the Christian calendar, of course.
Yeah.
And she is leading that, as she led at the Commonwealth Day service just a few weeks ago at Westminster Abbey. Now, I mean, I read a lot of my social media feeds and announcements from, like, the Republic, the pressure group, who are saying, why does she need a break? She only did 13 engagements between this period and that period. It's kind of the equivalent of people saying to me, well, you only appeared on the news for 5 minutes. What are you doing for the rest of the day? The work isn't just the moment that you're seen in public. It's like when you write an article, well, you could have written that article in 20 minutes, but the work that went into it before you started writing is quite intensive and takes a lot of time. So she is working. Let's be clear about that. And as you say, she's like a year, 18 months older than the king, isn't she?
Yeah.
And most people are probably doing one thing a week, visiting the grandchildren and maybe popping to Sainsbury's or Tesco. That she's active and in the public eye a lot at quite an age. And I think there's a lot of pressure on her at the moment.
She's travelling long distances as well.
She is, especially for someone who's not a fan of flying.
Yeah, for sure.
She's doing a lot. I mean, going back to the sort of social media element of all this, because I think even by the standards of some of the awful things we've seen over the last few years, it completely went out of control. I wanted to ask you about this news angle about potential Russian or Chinese interference. Do you think that's come into play?
Whenever I see things about what Russia or China may or may not have done, I think there was a news story around the Chinese, took a lot of electoral data like 3 years ago. I mean, nothing really surprises me. Yeah. And yet I just don't have any knowledge of how you do these things or what goes on behind the scenes. It felt like the whole world was talking about this. Certainly, I know quite a few colleagues who went over to America recently and they came back to me and saying, my goodness, the Americans are more obsessed about Kate Middleton, as they call her, than we are. And that's all they're talking about. And I just note today, I mean, there was that discussion about Stephen Colbert on The Late Show fueling a lot of those rumours by talking about them in great detail. And he's put out a very remorseful, but it was very much, look, I do a lot of jokes, they do a lot, said a lot of people, but I do set myself a standard not to profit in other people's misery.
Mm.
You know, in the light of day, know what Kate's going through. Clearly felt very remorseful about what he did and said.
We saw a bunch of apologies, didn't we, from Blake Lively?
Well, it makes sense, though, Blake Lively, because her husband has a good relationship with the Prince of Wales.
Well, indeed. I mean, William was at Wrexham not long ago.
Yeah.
But I think it served as quite a reminder to everyone, hasn't it, that you can gossip all you like, make all the judgments you like from the safety of your laptop, and no one really knows what's going on.
I found it very interesting, actually, that they managed to keep this a secret.
Yeah.
They clearly have a strong team that they can rely on and just don't talk. There were no leaks, no nothing. It was really interesting how this all really caught us by surprise.
I spoke to a good source at Kensington Palace about a week before Kate's announcement, and someone who's quite close to William and Kate, and they said, when this comes out, as it inevitably will, so therefore this person clearly knew that they were going to make an announcement at the end of the school term.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, when this comes out, as it clearly will, people are going to feel a lot of regret about how they've tried to guess or the conspiracy theories or criticised her for not having photos taken of her in her living room. I mean, you know, I've got a family member at the moment who's had a very severe back operation. She's a nurse, and yet she's off for 3 months with a back operation. It's quite normal for people to take long periods of time off work. And no one's asking her for a photo of her in her living room in pain.
Yeah. I think we do expect an unnatural amount of activity from people when they're going through this kind of thing.
Well, everyone's like, oh, they're on my payroll. Or they say
silly
things.
Or we're paying
like,
for them, etc.
So we should know what they're doing. And actually, they're just human beings and they have their own private life and they need their privacy.
But you could say the same about someone who works for the NHS or they're on the payroll. They're funded by taxpayer, or a teacher. They're also publicly funded, and yet no one says that they aren't allowed the time off to recover, to get better.
Yeah.
It's very interesting what you said, that they knew this announcement was coming. This was clearly something they knew they had to do towards the break of the Easter holidays. And actually it makes sense, because the first thing that clicked for me on Friday when we heard of the news was all that happened with the trooping the colour, you know?
Yes, with the MOD announcement, because, and then retracting the announcement.
Because at the time I was like, why would they even bother retracting it? If she can't make it at the time, they can later say it, but they made a big deal out of the fact that that was announced and it hadn't come from the palace, and then the MOD had to retract it. So it clicked for me then. That
everything is making sense
Everything makes sense now.
Someone joked to me yesterday, actually, Chris, that, you know, the palace press operation came in for quite a lot of stick earlier on in this whole situation. And they sort of last week went from zero to hero, didn't they, with that video. It must have been incredibly hard for some of the very great professionals that you and I work with to have kept their mouths shut for such a long time.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, you know, everyone was saying, you've badly handled it, this is all your fault, why didn't you do this or arrange a photo of that or put a statement out of this? I know, and if you've got your bosses who ultimately are in charge and they say, we don't want this out there until the kids are on the Easter holiday, we don't want anyone to know about it because I'm worried about George, Charlotte and Louis being teased, or at least too many people talking about it, or you know what kids are like. They might say, oh, do you know what? Cancer's really dangerous or something. You know, they obviously wanted to put their kids first, and everyone in that operation, from William and Kate down through the press office, the private office and everything else, just had to say, well, we're going to have to ride this out until the Friday that they break up, and there's not a lot we can do about it.
I wrote in the newsletter about this sort of new era of openness from the royal family. You know, we've seen it increasingly really throughout the king's reign so far, because he is naturally a more emotionally open person. I think, you know, it's just written all over his face, isn't it? If he's moved by something, you can see it. If he finds something funny, yeah, he's in absolute, you know, gales hysterics of laughter. Do you think that's helped with the way the public have taken this all on board?
I think the different approaches from the two palaces has not helped. We just discussed about Kensington Palace didn't have much choice and therefore they just had to ride it out. But I think because the other palace, Buckingham, has been more open, they have shared the news about the prostate, which is, for most men, a very personal operation. They've shared the news about the cancer, and they've also put the king out there a lot more. Because let's remember, the king has a constitutional role. He is the head of state. He has to do things that are connected to how our country operates. Kate, however, is the future queen consort, but currently she's the wife of the heir to the throne. There's no constitutional status for her as she steps back from public duties. And therefore, there was a completely different approach from Kensington Palace and Buckingham Palace for reasons of privacy. And I think everyone's entitled, but even if they had exactly the same medical prognosis, I think everyone's entitled to make their own personal private decision about how much to share. And I think you've got to think about, if you're at work, how much do you want to share with your work colleagues?
Chris, I wanted to ask you, and obviously from the point of view of ITV News, you mainly focus on the key players, the King, the Queen, the Prince and Princess of Wales. But do you think that now, in the absence of some of these players, there is going to be more of a focus on other members of the family? The Princess Royal, for example, Duke of Edinburgh has just turned 60. His profile has been a little higher than previously. Do you think that that's the way things are going to go until everyone's back up and running?
Possibly. I mean, I know the Prince Edward, Duke of Edinburgh, did the Alan Titchmarsh show a couple of weekends ago, didn't he, for his 60th birthday. And I think there inevitably will be a moment when people try to promote other members of the royal family. But I think there is that kind of fascination, really, just with the King and Queen, his son, Prince William, and his wife and their children. It's very kind of linear, if you like, at the moment, isn't it? And as much as we respect Princess Anne, the Princess Royal, for doing all the work that she does, and we know that she's a trooper, the media, be that ITV or the newspapers or the other broadcasters, really just focus on what I just call the top four.
So we're all hoping, obviously, for a swift recovery for both the King and the Princess. I have a feeling we're going to be talking to you again before long, Chris, because this story just keeps changing every few days, it seems.
She needs to focus on her recovery. She needs to do what's right for her medically before she even thinks about coming back into the public domain. I don't think anyone would criticise her for doing that.
Absolutely. Chris, thank you so much for joining us again. Another incredibly busy week. I'm sure we'll speak to you again in the coming months and see how things unfold.
Thank you, guys.
So interesting to hear it from a broadcasting point of view.
Yeah, because these guys, you know, are there for the sort of big moments in particular of the royal family. And obviously with our readership, we focus on lots of other members of the family as well. And there's a sort of a wider cast of characters, if you like. But I think certainly in terms of national news, it's a challenging one. Yeah, once you get beyond reporting these moments, and then there is very rightly now a need to give them space.
I can't believe in January we thought this was going to be a really quiet time.
Well, I know for a fact that my prediction about this being the year of travel has not come to pass.
Well, I mean, there's still a lot of months left, months left. Who knows?
Going nowhere fast at the moment, for sure.
Well, that's everything from us today. Thank you so much to Robert Hardman and Chris Shipp, and to you two for joining us. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, catch more from Hello with our news and entertainment show, The Daily Lowdown, available on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.